So, how is Fang doing? Difficult? It's neither difficult nor is it easy. It's just going, yeah? Huh? One putto after one putto after one putto, yeah? What is difficult with one putto, huh? If you think, oh, I have to do it for 5 hours, yeah, then it might be difficult. If it's just one putto, where's the difficulty? Can you do it? One putto, always. Yeah? When this putto is finished, do it another. Huh? When this breath is finished, do another breath. So where's the difficulty, huh? What is happening?
Someone just joined, and then...
Oh, okay. How many people have joined?
There's 20 people.
Oh.
It's as hot in Singapore as in Bangkok, you could say.
Singapore
is also very hot.
It's quite humid here, yeah. Not too hot, yeah, but very humid, yeah. It just rains and rains and rains. So, for everyone, yeah. I mean, practicing. We're practicing to calm the mind down. And so we stay with the Buddha or we stay with the breath. We know, yeah, we concentrate around the nose when we do the breath, yeah. And know the breath goes in, know the breath goes out, know the breath, yeah. It's a long in-breath or short in-breath, long out-breath or short out-breath, you know. It is detailed or it is rough, you know. It doesn't matter how the breath is. We just want to know at every moment how the breath is. Is it, you know, coming in, you know, is it at its height, you know, is it slowing down, you know, towards the out-breath, you know, and then it changes to the out-breath, you know, and then, yeah, go on, you know, for this, yeah. The more detail we have about the breath, the better our concentration is, and the better the sati, yeah, the knowingness develops. Yeah? The same for the Buddha, yeah. I mean, we repeat the Buddha, mentally repeat the Buddha, yeah. Is it fast? Is it slow? Is it detailed? Is it, you know, however the Buddha is, yeah. Is it the beginning of the Buddha? Is it the end of the Buddha? Yeah? That is how we train it, yeah. We know, yeah, the knowingness, the developing the sati, developing the knowingness of the object that we concentrate on is the importance, yeah. Samadhi is, you know, when we get into samadhi, there are no more thoughts and no more memories coming up, and we feel safe, yeah? We feel at ease, yeah? There is no future, there is no past, yeah? There are no worries and there is no fear. That is samadhi, yeah? And that's where we can rest, yeah? That's where we can recharge our batteries, and it is very important for us. No matter if we are practitioners here or if we are practitioners in the lay life. Yeah? I mean, you need to every day, you know, you go to sleep to recharge, you know, to recharge the body and to recharge the mind, yeah, so that the next day you have enough strength to go through another working day. Yeah, and you go, yeah. I mean, you get up in the morning. And then you go to work, you know, you eat a little bit, you know, and then when you come back home from work, you know, you eat another thing, then you distract yourself and then you go to sleep, yeah. That is the life, yeah. And the next day we do the same thing, and then we do the same thing, yeah. And in the beginning of our life, you know, we train this body, yeah, for how many years, yeah. We learn to walk, we learn to talk, yeah. Remember that, huh? How long did it take us, you know, to learn to walk? Yeah, about a year. Huh? To learn to talk, about a year, the same thing. And then we go to school and learn to read and to write and to sing. Yeah, for 15 years until we can use this body. Yeah, huh? And then after that, you know, we either have a higher education, go to university, or find a job. Yeah, and then our working life starts. Yeah. And then we get retired, you know, and, yeah, that's the end of our working life, you know, and then we just wait for death to come, yeah. distract ourselves until death comes, you know, and then we start the same routine again in the next life. Huh? Think about it very clearly, yeah? Is that what you want, you know? Do you think, you know, I mean, your life has so much fun, yeah? Is that what you think, you know, is fun? Yeah? Then go on, you know, then you don't have to find a way out, huh? Yeah? If you don't want to be reborn again and go through the whole process of it, I mean, then you better find a way out, yeah? And the way out is, yeah? The Fourth Noble Truth. Sila, keeping your 5 precepts. When we're here in the monastery, we keep the 8 precepts, yeah? Samadhi, yeah? What I explained in the beginning, yeah? Train the mind to get into samadhi, and samadhi is really when the mind stops thinking and memorizing, yeah? That's where we get a rest. That's where we recharge our batteries. And the longer, the more we can recharge our batteries, the less we need sleep, yeah? Sometimes, you know, sometimes I needed 2 hours of sleep per day, yeah? Because, I mean, I was in samadhi, you know, quite often during the day, so I don't need a lot of sleep, yeah? When I did a lot of investigation, you know, then I needed more sleep, 3 or 4 hours. Yeah? But that's about it. So that's where we rest the mind, samadhi. And then and vipassana is developing wisdom. Yeah? We don't develop knowledge, you know. Everybody can read the suttas, you know, and develop knowledge, but the knowledge is not wisdom. Wisdom and knowledge differ. Wisdom is the insight into the matter of, or into the truth of the things, yeah? And we only can see it with our inner eyes, yeah? We can experience it, you know, we can experience the truth, yeah? We can experience the truth of dukkha, yeah? What is dukkha, yeah? Dukkha is pain, you know, it can be suffering, it can be a nuisance, you know, it can be, you know, anything, you know, I mean, from a slide I don't like, you know, I mean, this is not comfortable, uncomfortable, you know, I mean, dis-ease, you know, or so on, yeah? That is all dukkha. Yeah? We can dive into dukkha, investigate dukkha, what is dukkha? And when we do samatha, you know, I mean, we dive into, you know, when we sit for a long time, you know, I mean, there will be pain, yeah? So we can investigate pain. What is pain? How does it feel like? The first thing, you know, for investigating any kind of feeling is to accept it, to feel it, yeah? Really feel it, yeah? I mean, if we have some aversion against pain, then we cannot really feel it, yeah? And we never get to the matter of the truth. A feeling, yeah? there's a feeling of dukkha, or there's a feeling of pain. So, what is pain, you know? How does it feel like, yeah? And where is it located, you know? And then we look where it is located, yeah? Is it in the right knee, or is it in the left knee? Is it in the back, or is it in the head? You know, I mean, we just go and look, you know? Where is it? Is it in the skin? Is it in the muscles? Is it in the tendons? Is it in the flesh? Is it in the bones? Where is the pain? Huh? Can you find it? Huh? Normally we cannot find it, yeah? And when we realize we cannot find it there, then the pain switches to another location, yeah? And then we do the same thing, yeah? We go to the other location, you know, and do the same thing. Okay, accept the pain, feel the pain, you know, and and then look where the pain is, in the skin, you know, we ask the same question, is it in the skin, you know, and then we look at the skin. Is it in the tendons, and we look at the tendons, and is it in the muscles, and we look at the muscles, and we cannot find it, yeah? So, and then it moves to another place, and it moves, you know, and might move 3 or 4 or 5 times, yeah, until it shows us where it comes from, yeah? Because we know, every one of us knows, you know, I mean, if there's enough pain, you know, we get up and the pain is gone. So what kind of pain is that? That's what we want to know. That's the investigation of pain. And we can do this kind of, when we learn this kind of investigation, we can do this investigation for any kind of feeling, yeah? Any kind of feeling then comes up, you know, we can investigate like this, yeah? Investigation leads to wisdom, yeah? To see the truth with our own inner eyes, yeah? And that's what we learn, yeah? After that, you know, I mean, we do the investigation of the 5 khandhas, yeah? The 5 khandhas are body, yeah, feeling, bodily feeling, mental feeling, yeah? memory and thoughts, yeah, memory and association, thoughts and yeah, consciousness. But we stuck with the body, you know, for the first, you know, for the first three stages of enlightenment, yeah. Body investigation, see that the body is not self, yeah. We can use, you know, in our investigation, we can use all these three principles, yeah. The three universal characteristics of this universe. Anicca, it is impermanent, you know, the thought appears and it disappears. It has nothing to do with me, because there is somebody who knows that, that there is a thought, yeah. If you don't believe it, ask the thought and ask him, do you know your thought, you know, and wonder what he's going to reply to you. Nothing, of course. A feeling, the same thing. There's a feeling, you know. And the feeling doesn't know it's a feeling. It's our association that tells us it's a feeling. It's our association that tells us, you know, it's a thought, you know, and so on, yeah. So we investigate the body, you know, and see that the body is not us, yeah. I mean, the citta is the driver of the body, just like the driver of the car is not the car. Yeah? We have to realize it, yeah? And it's the same thing, you know, I mean, if we would have been born in a car, you know, die in a car and never get out of the car, we would believe we are the car. We and the car are one and the same thing. Yeah? The citta is born in this body and dies in this body and never gets out of this body, so it probably believes, you know, we are this body, yeah? And we are constantly worried about this body, you know, worried to death sometimes about this body, yeah. The body is a vehicle, it's a car, yeah. We need to maintain it and that's it, yeah. We don't need overly worrying about this body, yeah. It is born, you know, and it will die sooner or later, it gets sick, you know, yeah. And it follows the karma of us, yeah. It's follows the karma of our rebirth. You know, if we have killed people in our last or previous lives, you know, I mean, we will have a short life. If we have never harmed any living being, we will have a long life. Yeah? We just for, yeah. The moment we are born, you know, I mean, this body has, you know, has the age already written into it, you know. Huh? At a certain time, you know, when the clock runs out, you know, then we die. Yeah? No matter of what, you know, I mean, yeah, the doctors tell us, you know, we die of this or die of that. No, we die because of our karma expired. That's the only cause of death, yeah. But nowadays we don't believe the Lord Buddha anymore. We believe, you know, the doctors, they tell us all sorts of things, yeah. So, I think that is enough for the introduction, yeah. And one thing, you know, I need to always tell you, when you're practicing, remember one thing. When you do samatha, as long as you're with your object of the Buddha or the breath, you're on the right path. If you're not with the Buddha or not with the breath, yeah, and go out into this or that, with the exception of the feeling of pain, yeah, then you're off the path. So you have to return to the path. Bring it back to the Buddha or bring it back, yeah? Don't be interested in what is happening outside, yeah? Remember, yeah? When you do samatha, if you're with the Buddha or if you're with the breath, then you are on the correct path. If you're interested in what this is happening or that is happening or this memory or that memory or this thought, or that is off the path. You're off the path, yeah? Very simple instruction, but, you know, we tend to forget it, you know, we tend to be fooled by the kilesas, oh, this is important, or that is important, or where is this thought coming from, yeah? Where is this memory coming from? Where is the cloud coming from? It just comes and it goes. Boops. Yeah? There's no need to go into investigation where these things are coming from, yeah? We just know when we do samatha, we are with the Buddha, then we are on the right path. We are with the breath, we are on the right path. If we are with something else, if our attention is with something else, then we are on the wrong path. Yeah? The only exception is, you know, I mean, if there's so much pain that we cannot concentrate on the Buddha, on the breath anymore, so then we go investigate the pain. And then we are with the pain, yeah? If anything else comes in, you know, we are off the path, yeah? And it's the same for the investigation, yeah? if we are the, if we select our investigation, you know, of the body, I mean, take the whole body or take a part of the body or take one of the 32 parts of the body, then we investigate this, yeah, as long as we are with the object chosen, yeah, for our investigation, we are on the path. If we are off, yeah, then we are not, yeah, practicing correctly. Very simple instruction, but we tend to forget it instantly, yeah. That's why I want to repeat it, yeah? Okay? What are you doing in Bangkok, huh, by the way?
I'm flying to Sakhon tomorrow.
Sakhon, that is Isan already. Yeah, what are you doing there? Yeah.
It's Lompo Awan's birthday on Tuesday. There's some events.
Okay.
GD also.
Yeah. These Singaporeans, you know, they are travel all over the world, yeah. There are places, you know, the place is too small, you know, they need to go. Country is very small, you know, lots of houses, you know, there's no field, you know, there's hardly anywhere, you know, where you can get rid of, you know, where you can be alone. Okay. Now have fun. So, okay, now people can ask questions, yeah?
Okay. So anyone with questions, you can raise your hand. Then you can unmute yourself to ask the question. Anyone would like to go first?
Where did you go?
You have a question to ask?
Yeah? Yes?
Yeah. Good evening, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes, you can hear me. Yeah, well, I can't see you, but it's okay. Yeah.
We don't see him, huh? Yeah, okay.
Actually, I want to ask, what's the Vipassana technique? Like, I don't understand what exactly you mean by it. Because when I read some other books about, for example, from Ajahn Sumedho, he says that we don't concentrate on any one particular object. You just make your mind open to everything and just bring it back to your Buddha or breath as a refuge. And just let your mind be open.
Yeah.
Is that what it means? Or
no.
Because in Ajahn Mahabhava's tradition, I see that there is emphasis on investigation on one particular object.
That's right.
Actually, there is difference. So what exactly is Vipassana? Like if I'm being mindful of objects during my day,
yeah.
I cannot let any thought come and just letting it allow to come and then sees. Is that being mindful? Is that Vipassana?
No, that's not Vipassana. I mean, you might see Anicca, you might see, you know, you might see Anatta, but you know, these things come and go, yeah? And there's no cutting of the kilesas who produce these things to come and go, yeah? So you have to investigate the object, you know? You have to investigate, for instance, the body to let go of the attachment of the body. Why are you, you know, I mean, the question is, why are you attached to this body? The body is a vehicle, you know, that you use for your creativity or whatever. But if you don't investigate it, you will not find out the truth, yeah? Because whatever comes into the body is very nice and smells nice, you know, and tastes nice. And whatever comes out of the body is, yeah, I mean, has one color and one smell, one stink, yeah? Whatever comes out of the body, you know, is disgusting, and whatever goes into the body is beautiful, yeah? If you don't understand the truth about this, yeah, then how can we, if you don't concentrate on the body or parts of the body, we will not understand the truth about this nature of the body. And Vipassana is understanding the nature, yeah? It's understanding the nature of feelings, you know, like explained in the pain investigation, so we concentrate on the feeling of pain, or later on a feeling of hatred or feeling of lust, you know, or, you know, the body, yeah? If we don't concentrate on one object, yeah, I mean, we will never get to the truth of it. I understand, you know, Goenka trains the same way, you know. I mean, you can do that for the rest of your life and there's no wisdom coming, yeah. You might see these things are anicca, anatta or dukkha, you know, but that's it, yeah. If you don't concentrate on the object and want to understand, you know, yeah, the nature of this object, yeah, Maybe you know, in the later stages of investigation, the object, you know, I mean, disintegrates into the four elements, yeah? Into earth element, water element, fire element, and air element. So all objects, yeah, even thought objects, you know, are made out of these four elements. Whatever exists in this universe is made out of these four elements, yeah? You understand that?
Yes. Because I was reading his book saying, he basically said that if you really follow, I mean, not follow, but really keep up with and, you know, patiently endure these feelings or thoughts, eventually you will see their cessation and wisdom will arise, something along that.
Yeah, I mean, the only wisdom that will arise is that you see thoughts are impermanent, but you don't see why all these thoughts are coming out. What brings these thoughts up? And that's the kilesas. We need to uproot the kilesas, yeah, to understand what this is feeling. Why do we like this feeling? Why do we dislike this feeling? You don't understand it if you just observe them coming and going.
So yeah? We only get the ability to, you know, bear with them.
What?
To withstand these negative thoughts or negative feelings. We just only get the strength by observing them. Withstand these feelings.
Yeah, I mean, that is a way, you know, to live easily in this world, you know, if you can accept unpleasant feelings and pleasant feelings, but you still don't understand where are they coming from. I mean, where is greed and hatred coming from? Even, you know, if it's only in its subtle form, it's still there, so you can never reach, you know, you can never reach Sotapanna, Sakadagami, Anagami or Arhanship. Because you do not understand the nature of these five khandhas that we are attached to.
So these thoughts will still persist even after doing all this.
Yeah. I mean, you can be happy with these thoughts or unhappy with these thoughts. You know, they come and go, but they will still persist, yeah? Unless you find the cause of these things, you know, and uproot the cause, yeah? And the cause, you know, for most of these things, you know, lies within the body, you know, with the likes and dislikes, yeah. You like something, you know, or you dislike something, and it all is connected to the body and to the senses, yeah. If you don't understand that and how it is created, you know, I mean, you will not be able to overcome it. Or uproot it, yeah. Okay?
I just feel like these practices, are too much diversified. Like, there's so much to investigate. There's literally so many body parts you can investigate. Even in just four elements, these are already too much. And I feel like there's too much variation and you don't know how to stay central to the main motive. I don't know. You can like go really wrong with them.
Yeah, I mean,
that's what I think.
I mean, there are too many body parts, but how do the body parts differ if you don't, you know, look at the body parts, you know? Yeah, when we look at the lung or we look at, you know, the kidney, you know, I mean, how do these body parts differ? Yeah? What are they made of? Yeah? Why do we like this one or why do we like that one? Or if you want to stay with one object, then stay, you know, with one object, you know. I mean, be the skin. Remove the skin from your body and look what is underneath it. Yeah? And then remove the flesh, you know, and look what is underneath it. Then remove the tendons and see what is underneath it. Or, you know, take the whole body and let it die and see how it dies, yeah. All these things, you know, I mean, are practices. I mean, of course, people don't like to do that, yeah. Especially in the West, they don't like to do asupa. why should I look at this, you know? I mean, think about a doctor, you know, who opens his first, you know, I mean, when they are in training, they open the first corpse, you know, and what happens to these doctors, you know, or beginning doctors, they either fall unconscious or they throw up. Why do they throw up? Because they see the loathsomeness of the body, yeah? They see all this filth, you know, I mean, that we cover up with the skin. You understand that?
Yes.
You don't have to do it, you know. I mean, I said, you know, if you want to understand, you know, if you want to reach Sotapanna, I mean, that is one of the stages to get disengaged from the body. So you have to investigate this body, you know. I mean, what the body is the body and there's the citta, yeah. Okay?
Thank you.
Mm.
Anyone else have questions? Can you raise your hand? Celia from Peru. Yeah.
Hello, Ajahn.
Mm.
I have a question. How to work with judging others, not in the sense of being judgmental?
Mm.
Because on one hand, it seems like I'm full of ignorance and conceit when I do it.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, you need some judgment, not to know
no.
whom to spend some time with, or even which ajahns or monks to follow. So how to work with that? No?
I mean, if you see judgment, you know, then say there is judgment, you know, and then look what is happening. I mean, there are two things. Eh? I mean, there's our mind, our memory, and there's the citta. Yeah? I mean, you can feel if this person is, you know, helpful to you, or if it is dangerous to you or unhelpful to you, if it's wholesome or unwholesome. You don't need to mind, you don't need to judge this person. Because, I mean, every person, think about every person has some good in it and has some bad in it, yeah? And it depends on us what we want to see, yeah? And if you have friends, you know, yeah, you know that this kind of person is judged differently by different kinds of person. So it's not useful, yeah? See your reaction towards this person. See there is judgment and, yes, and say there is judgment, I don't want to judge, yeah? Because that's how you divide up your world. But you need practice. You need practice of samatha, you know, yeah. Without that, you cannot, you know, you can't see it, you know, and it is very difficult to let go of, yeah?
I try to do much meditation as possible.
Yeah? Okay.
So it's enough to just show, to realize, okay, I'm being judgmental and just let it go.
Yeah, try to let it go, or one of the best things is, I don't know. I'm not sure. Yeah? When the judgment comes up, I'm not really sure. Yeah?
Yes, that makes sense. That can work. Okay. Brilliant. Thank you.
Yes, hello? I mean, it is for everybody, you know, this judgmental, you know, I mean it, especially in the Westerns, yeah? They always feel superior. Where are you from? Hello?
Yeah. Fred, you can unmute yourself. You're still on mute. Yeah.
Hi, Mapur. I'm from the United States. I just wanted to ask you, what can we teach any meditation to our child if they're only 11 years old? And also, yes. Just one more thing. Please don't leave, Ajahn. I'm not sure if you were still considering that, but
what?
You've been a great inspiration for all of us. So just want to say that, and thank you for taking the time for us.
You're welcome, yeah. I mean, we were talking about, you know, judgment, you know, I mean, some people see in me an inspiration, other people see in me, you know, yeah, a conceited, you know, egomaniac, yeah, I mean, so it depends on, yeah. I didn't want to say the other thing. For your child, yeah, I mean, try, you know, invite him to sit with you in meditation, and if he wants to, yes, that's fine. And teach him then how to do it, yeah? Children, I mean, 11 is already late, you know? I mean, they should, with 7 or 6 or 7, where they're interested in what their parents are doing. With 11, they already have other thoughts, yeah? But you can invite him to sit with you in meditation. Tell him, you know, how to do it, you know? And if he likes it, it's fine, yeah? If he doesn't like it, you know, there's nothing you can do. Don't force him, because then you make him very angry, and he never picks it up in his further life, yeah? So, okay?
Okay, thank you. Thank you, sir.
simple. I just read out a few questions.
Yeah, but how is your, Sani, you know, I mean, you're traveling all over the world, you know, how is your practice?
No good.
See, I mean, you don't have a girlfriend, you don't have a wife, you don't have kids, you know, I mean, you could do a lot of meditation, you know, huh? You do it daily?
No.
Yeah. Let the other people do it first, you know, invite the other people, yeah. It's like the Tibetans, you know, let everybody go to Nibbana first and we will be the last, you know, we want to push. Okay, so, yeah, read out the question.
Yeah, there you go. First question, is a question about change of perception during daily life.
Mm-hmm.
For example, when I look in the mirror, there is a sense of not knowing who am I anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Or when I call a person's name, there's just emptiness and everything. What I once knew about that person falls away. These things happen randomly and I'm often shocked or surprised. Could you comment on these experiences as I'm confused if it's something psychological like depersonalization or it comes with regular meditation practice? Thank you for your help.
It certainly doesn't come with regular meditation practices, but I need to know a lot more about what he is doing. Yeah, what kind of practice is he doing? How many hours per day is he doing? How good is he in samadhi? You know, I mean, these things are very important for me to know. Yeah, I mean, just this question alone, you know, I mean, can be anything. So I really cannot answer it. It can happen, but. I mean, if it happens to much of the extent, you know, I mean, then it's certainly not good, yeah? Of course, you know, if you look at a tree, you know, and then see, you know, okay, yeah. I mean, we define it as a tree, that's it, yeah? But the next time you look at it, you know, you see it's a tree, or it's this kind of tree, or that kind of tree, this kind of person, or that kind of person, yeah? So, I mean, I really cannot answer this question because I really don't understand the problem and I certainly do not understand, you know, what he's doing, what kind of practice he's doing. Yeah. So he has to explain that, yeah, before I can give an advice, yeah. Okay. Next question.
Venerable Ajahn, adults, if Nibbana is the unconditioned mind, natural state, then why is it that there are so many causal effects for attaining it? For example, you have to be born at a place where there is spirituality. In the next life, you are unaware of your previous lives. You can be born among people who might drag you to the world of sensuality. Mm-hmm. Teenagers mostly are affected by this kind of companies. Is Nirvana a causal thing too? We can only attain it in human birth, which is rare. Otherwise, we are basically stuck and we are not in control. Do we have to rip all our karmas or we wouldn't be liberated? What if it's too much karma? I just feel like I'm not in control of so many factors. If Nirvana is my home, why am I being asked to prove so many qualifications for entering it?
I mean, how many eons of lifetimes have you lived, you know? I mean, with each life, you gain some experience and you lose some, yeah? You lose some knowledge about some experiences, yeah? I mean, if you go for Nirvana, I mean, you start, you know, if you start at the kindergarten, just like, you know, in your life, yeah? See it as your life. The first thing is you go to kindergarten. You learn a little bit about the world, you know, mostly with pictures, you know, and simple games, yeah? And then you go to the primary school, and then you go to secondary school, and then you go to high school, and then you go to university. Yeah? I mean, it takes enormous, it takes lifetime after lifetime. And the thing is, yeah, I mean, see, I mean, you can see it, you know, you can see it, yeah? I mean, when you went to university or when you went to school, yeah? There's a subject, you know, where you're good at and other people are completely, yeah, they don't understand what is going on, yeah? It is because you have trained it in your previous life, yeah? I mean, a good engineer, you know, I mean, an extremely good engineer or inventor, you know, has trained that for lifetimes after lifetimes, you know, the engineering, you know, so he understands very quickly what is happening, yeah. It's the same with a doctor, yeah. I mean, there are exceptional doctors, you know, they look at you, you know, and they see they see instantly what is the problem in the body. They don't have to do all this examination, yeah. But there are doctors who does it for the first time, and they have to go through the books, you know, read, you know, what could this be, what could this be. Then he tries out this, he tries out that, you know. So, I mean, he gathers his experience. Just like a person, you know, I mean, who comes from university, goes into a job, you know. I mean, after 30, 40 years, he has experience in his field. I mean, why do you say, I mean, we don't know, of course we don't know, or most of us don't remember the last life, yeah, but the experience is still there, from the previous life, the karma, yeah, and karma is that, you know, what you take, yeah, what goes actually into the next life, and karma is all the things that you have done, good or bad, yeah, so if a person is very generous in this life, you know, this karma goes on into the next life. Yeah, and then, you know, he might be fooled, you know, by the riches that he gets, you know, into spending it, you know, and not doing what leads to the riches, yeah. But, you know, if he has done it here for many lifetimes, I mean, he's just naturally giving everything away, yeah. So Nibbana. I mean, that is the end goal, yeah? It's the unconditioned, yeah? But we are conditioned, yeah? And he should look at himself how conditioned he is, yeah? And, yeah, I mean, how did he know the things where he was good at, yeah? Look at the other people who were not good at this, yeah? Where does it come from? It comes from previous lives, yeah? Look at the characteristic tendency. Some people are, you know, prone to anger, very much to anger. Other people are prone to love. Other people are more relaxed, yeah? Where does it come from? From karma, from the experience of our last life. We don't have to actually know what our last life is, yeah? I mean, we can experience our last life in the form of now, yeah? So whatever we have, you know, whatever we good, you know, whatever qualities we have, you know, be it good qualities or bad qualities, you know, that comes from the previous life. And, of course, you know, it is accentuated by our doing in this life, yeah. The older we have, you know, the older we get, you know, the more we put more, yeah. We put more onto this, you know, characteristic tendencies or reduces characteristic tendencies, yeah. If we are envious and we see, you know, this envy, you know, causes a lot of dukkha, I mean, we reduce this character trait, yeah? And, you know, in the next life, we don't have this so much, yeah? So that is the way to Nibbana. I mean, thinking about, yeah, I mean, yeah, let's just say, you know, I mean, go the path, you know, huh? Every time you do one step, you know, in the right direction, and sooner or later, you know, maybe after eons of lifetimes, you will reach it. Or if you have done a lot, you know, in your previous lives, you might reach it in this life or within the next lives. Okay?
Next question.
Exhausted already. Yeah?
Yeah. Dear Ajahn, this is about sexual desire. When we see a beautiful woman, our heart is shaken and wants to see more. I'm wondering why our mind can automatically separate what is beautiful and not, even though since we were born, we are not taught how to classify what is beautiful. Thank you, Ajahn, for your compassion of teaching Dharma.
It's the same as I explained, you know, in the previous answer. It's pretty much our characteristic tendencies, yeah? I mean, some people look, yeah, I mean, you have the same room. You have one woman, you know. Some people think it's extremely beautiful and extremely sexy. Other people think, you know, what is there? Nothing. Yeah. It depends on our characteristic tendencies, what we like, you know, what we pursue in our life, and that's how we see it, how we view it, yeah. I mean, it's not only this life, of course, yeah. I mean, I know in the 70s, you know, the psychologists, you know, came out with tabula rasa. I mean, all the chittas are the same. No, it's not, yeah. I mean, we all have very, very big imprints, you know, in the chitta. Yeah, with this characteristic tendency or that characteristic tendency. And likes and dislikes, you know, are characteristic tendencies, yeah. Some people, you know, like art, other people don't like art, they like engineering or whatever, yeah. If you want to know more, you know, I have to ask, yeah. I mean, I explained it in the last, you know, last answer, you know, it was pretty much the same, yeah, where this all comes from. Yeah? Next.
Venerable Ajahn Martin, could you please explain the difference between the fetter doubt and the hindrance doubt? It is said the sotapanna breaks the fetter of doubt, but it is also said that only an arahant can destroy the five hindrances, one of which is doubt as well. That got me a little bit confused.
It also got me confused because I don't know what the five hindrances, what kind of five hindrances he's talking about. I mean, the feather of doubt, yeah? I mean, once doubt is gone, doubt that there's karma, doubt that there are results of karma, yeah? I mean, that is one of the doubts. Doubt that there's heaven, doubt that there's hell, doubt that there are beings in heaven, doubt that there are beings in hell. Once this fetter of doubt is broken, then there is no more doubt about the path, you know. I don't understand, you know, I don't know where he got the... I haven't read so... hardly any books, yeah. So I don't know the five hindrances, yeah. Does anybody of you know? Oh, it's the five hindrances to get into samadhi. Oh, yeah. That is completely different, yeah. Doubt that you can get into samadhi, yeah. I mean, there are seven enlightenment factors, you know. Yeah, it has nothing to do with each other, yeah. I mean, does the arahant break the five hindrances? I don't think so. I mean, it's completely different hindrances. And, you know, English translation is English translation, you know, I mean, it's not always accurate, yeah. So, I mean, the fetter of doubt, you know, is the fetter of doubt, you know, without cutting down the fetter of doubt, yeah, or eliminating the fetter of doubt, you cannot enter the sotapanna. And once you're sotapanna, I mean, there is a doubt, yeah. You know there's heaven, there's hell, you know. And you know that you don't go down in hell anymore. Yeah, I mean, so the doubt is broken, yeah. I mean, there are still the hindrances, you know. I mean, too lazy, you know, I call it laziness, you know, too lazy to go into samadhi or too lazy to do some practice, yeah. But this has nothing to do with doubt. Okay. Next or last?
I think it's the last one from on the submission online. Venerable Ajahn Martin, if I recall correctly, you mentioned that the Venerable Ajahn Mahabhoa was once bitten by a scorpion. Could you please tell us how the scorpion was handled after that incident? Where I live, there are many yellow scorpions, and since they are considered to be an urban plague with very little natural predators and deadly venom, many people say we should not just release them. What is the most skillful way to deal with such creatures without breaking the precepts? Thank you so much for everything.
I really hardly understand the question. What is he asking? How to deal with scorpions? Or what?
Without breaking the precepts,
yeah. Carry them away and put them somewhere else. Just like we do with ants and with rats, you know, we catch rats, you know, and then we release them somewhere in the nature, yeah?
But the scorpions are dangerous, not particularly.
I mean, they are very slow moving, yeah? I mean, we catch them with a shovel, you know, we put them on the shovel, you know, and then, you know, put them somewhere else. I mean, I've never seen any yellow scorpions. I see white scorpions that are very painful, yeah. Or the black scorpions that are less painful, yeah. Also, we have white and black scorpions, yeah. I mean, yes, you know, I opened it. I opened the lid of a what is it called? A water tank, you know, and there's a scorpion inside, you know. Yeah, so what? Yeah, just, you know, throw it away, you know. They will survive, you know. They have a hard shell, yeah. No, you know, put them, you know, when you see them. Yeah, centipedes are much more. Yeah. I mean, Lungta wasn't sure if it was a centipede or it was a scorpion. Yeah. And so I can't remember very well. I think we decided it was a centipede, you know, that. Yeah? Scorpions normally get out of your way, just like snakes normally get out of your way. Yeah. Unless, you know, you hit them very, you have no sati, you know, and you tread on them, then of course, yeah. So, you don't need to break the precepts, you don't need to kill them, yeah? It's like snakes, you don't need to kill them, you just catch them, you know, you catch them and then you put them somewhere else where there is no harm, yeah? In big nature, yeah? And of course, you know, in Singapore, there's hardly any nature. But you can put them to the reservoir in Singapore, yeah? There's a big reservoir on the hill, yeah? Yeah, there you can release them, yeah? And they don't feed on human beings, so I mean just leave them there. That's not breaking the precepts. But if you kill them, then of course it is breaking the precepts. You kill one and then come two more come, yeah? And then the next, you know, the more you kill, you know, then the next life you wander around like a scorpion, yeah? You will be a scorpion, yeah? That is a karmic effect, you know. I mean, killing a lot of animals, yeah? At the same time, yeah? Same type of animals, you will be born as an animal, yeah? And that's not what we wish to, yeah? Okay, last question. So we have some questions, you know, from the web, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Are there some questions from now from the audience?
Yeah, anyone? There's a follow-up question from so he asked the first question on the Vipassana.
Yeah?
I think he just needs a very precise technique for investigation of the body, because to him it's still a very broad kind of instruction that is different from like samatha, which is just to be with the breath.
Okay. I mean, if you listen to my talk, I often talk about this. Okay, let's investigate, you know, the body. What is the body? So, first we do samatha until the mind gets completely calm, yeah? Until there is no more thoughts, no more memories, yeah? Once we are refreshed and re-energized, then we sit down, yeah? Look at the body, and then take part of the body, yeah? We cut off the hand, yeah? In imagination, not really, yeah, and put it in front of us. Then we take off the other hand, then we take out the underarm, the upper arm, and so on, until all the parts of the body are in front of us. And who sits there and sees all these body parts? Yeah, that is the citta. Yeah. And then we take the body parts back, yeah, and if we do it correctly, or if we do it long enough, there will be a short moment of disengagement, yeah. We see, you know, there's a gap, you know. I mean, once we see all the body parts, yeah, there's the body parts, you know, what of the body parts is the body? Yeah. Is the heart the body? Is the lungs the body? Is the brain the body? But if all the body parts are out there, and the citta sits and sees them, there's a little break, you know, in the attachment to the body, yeah. And that we have to do that often enough until the break is complete, yeah? Until we see, okay, body is body and the citta is the citta. That is, yeah, precise, yeah? Okay?
Yeah.
Does he understand it?
Yes. All right, if you have any follow-up questions, you can ask.
Okay, let's... Oh, wow. So,
only two.
Huh?
Only two,
okay.
Dear Lumpur, I have a question about the fifth precept, not taking intoxicants which cloud the mind.
Yeah.
When someone is dying and is taking morphine for pain relief, would that be breaking the precept? And me as a nurse injecting the morphine, am I contributing to an unwholesome action, even if my intention is to relieve the person from pain?
I mean, the nurse has no... I mean, there's no karma for the nurse, you know? I mean, that depends on... It depends on the patient. Yes, I mean, it's a slight break of precepts, yeah? I wouldn't call it very difficult because, I mean, we all need to take, you know, sooner or later painkillers, but morphine is really strong, yeah? I mean, it is, you know, sending you, and it's sending you in a non-awareness that is not really good, you know, when you want to face death, yeah? You want to face death with a clear mind, yeah? So morphine, you know, or other, you know, other, I don't know, what is it, what is the other thing, morphine and heroin, you know, they are not really good, you know, for sending you into the next life, yeah? what is going to happen, you know, when you do this, yeah? I mean, if there is a patient, you know, who has cancer in the last stage of cancer and has extreme pain, yeah? I mean, what is happening to him when he dies, you know, he just goes, yeah? The karma that is the strongest. He follows the strongest karma. So he doesn't have any clue where he goes. You know, he will end up, you know, he dies and end up somewhere in one of the realms, you know, I mean, without any choice, yeah? So to be clear in your mind and make a choice where to go, because you have many options, you know, even in death you have many options where to go, yeah? So...
I have incurred significant losses in the stock market, which has left my mind deeply agitated. Mm. Due to my strong attachment to money, I'm unable to let go of stock market trading, even though I've not earned a single penny from it to date. Despite this, I cling to the hope that one day I'll make substantial profits and recover my losses.
Yeah.
I recognize that this turmoil stems from my unstable, restless mind, and that to live a happier life, I must learn to detach.
Yeah.
Yet my mind refuses to accept this reality. What should I do? Is this a karmic consequence or simply the result of my own mistakes?
It's a result of his own mistake. It is, you know, I mean, stock trading is in the same way of gambling. Yeah? I mean, people who are addicted to gambling cannot let go. What he can do is, you know, start to learn meditation. That's how he can control his mind, yeah? And see, you know, I mean, stock trading, you know, gambling, you know, I mean, your heart races, you know, I mean, I wonder sometimes, you know, why don't people get heart attack, you know, on the gambling table, you know? So, meditation is the only, you know, I mean, to see, you know, that there is, you know, and he says, you know, restlessness, meditation, you know, making the mind completely calm and seeing the dukkha in his action, yeah? See, you know, see this restlessness when he gambles and hopes for and, you know, he's disappointed. See the dukkha. I mean, how can you not see the dukkha? Yeah. Okay? So, any questions from the audience here? Yeah?
Of what?
Of white? A wild animals. Get used to them. I mean, observe them. Yeah. I mean, if you see a snake, yeah. I mean, observe it. Yeah. I mean, it looks. It, you know, it goes its own way. It normally doesn't collide, you know, with the human beings. Yeah. Like the other animals, they don't come, you know, and feed from your hand. Yeah. Except when they are trained animals, like monkeys, you know, or others. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you see a lot of gorogs, you know. I mean, what are gorogs in squirrels? Yeah. Look what they do. Yeah. Look at the ants, you know, I mean, they don't bother about us, you know, they have their own world to live in, yeah? Only if these worlds collide, you know, and if one of the animals feels threatened, you know, then it will do us some harm, yeah? So, with sati, you shouldn't have any problem. You see it, yeah? And then you stop and you observe it, yeah? I mean, one time, you know, I'm in Pantat, you know, I was sweeping, you know, and across my path was a really, python, yeah? I mean, quite long, four, and quite big, you know? And I said, you know, okay, because I know if I step over it, you know, it will catch me, yeah? So I waited until it moved away, you know, 5-10 minutes, I'd move, yeah? Talk to them. They are beings, you know, just like us. They have been human beings before. Yeah? What? Can somebody... sleep outside? Yeah. No, don't worry. They don't come. Yeah? I mean, sometimes I was sitting on my... A snake, you know, I mean, eating a frog on my sitting cushion, yeah. Just get, I mean, over time you will get used to it, yeah. I mean, in the beginning I walked only along the path, yeah. Because, you know, I was not afraid, but, you know, I mean, I was very careful. You know, now I'm just walking anyway, yeah. I mean, they hear you coming, yeah, most of these animals are snakes, you know, but with centipedes it's a little bit different, you know, they don't have eyes, you know, they don't see that, you know, they listen to, you know, what is coming, you know, and they might go into your way and then they attack you, but it's, you know, I mean, 3-4 days and then the pain is gone. Yeah? Can you repeat it, please?
It's a waste of time to develop metta.
I mean, no, it's not really a waste of time, but we don't really do it here, yeah? I mean, developing metta, you know, I wouldn't consider it a waste of time, yeah? But if you want to go the path of practice, you know, then, you know, I mean, it's considered not being very helpful. But otherwise, you know, I mean, to get along, you know, when you live in the city and have work to do, you know, I mean, metta is very helpful. Yeah? Yeah. But here, you know, here in the monastery, I mean, it's not considered, you know, going along the path, yeah? Or advancing on the path, yeah? But, you know, in daily life, you know, I mean, it can be helpful, yeah? Half an hour of metta for all beings, you know, yeah? And especially now with the Palestinians, you know, who are slaughtered, you know, mass slaughtered and starved to death, yeah? Okay. Yes?
How does Kamma is formed in the mind? Like in the mind, several things happen when you see the object. Like I'm not saying things will act automatically. So
yes.
How the Kamma is formed in the mind?
How the Kamma is formed in the mind?
Yeah.
Yeah, by going, I mean, if you have a thought, you know, a thought comes up, yeah, you believe it, you trust it, then this thought becomes stronger. If you have an idea and you believe and trust in this idea becomes stronger, yeah? So it comes back more often, yeah? The thought that you thought only one time, you know, I mean, you just see it, okay, and then it never comes back, yeah? But thoughts that you have thought very often, yeah, I mean, come back very often, yeah. Actions, you know, that is how most of our actions are, you know, because we program, you know, we program. If I see this person, I act like this. If I see that person, I act like that, yeah. I mean, that is programming, so you can unprogram it, yeah. But that, no, let's see, you know, what, yeah, what am I doing? What is this person, yeah? It is, you know, it's karmic result from previous lives, yeah? I mean, haven't you met people, you know, I mean, in your life, you know, you saw them and you were actually, you know, I mean, I don't want to get in touch with this person, yeah? Or another person, you see another person and, you know, he's like a friend to you. You never seen him, but the first time you see him, you know, he's like a friend to you. I mean, that does happen. And it happens because of our karma. Because of the karma between these two people, or these two persons, yeah? But we can undo all these things, you know, like I answered, you know, we can unprogram ourselves and be, you know, have sati, you know, and know what is good, what is wholesome, and what is not wholesome. Okay? Ask your chitta. It knows if it's wholesome or unwholesome. Don't ask the mind. The mind always gives us a deluded and deluded answer. Yeah, the mind doesn't normally know it. You know. Yeah, I mean that is mostly from memory and from thoughts. You know, and it is really delusional. Yeah, but the chitta knows if it's something is wholesome. Yeah, I mean, if I wanted to know something, I looked at my heart, you know, if I did something and my heart was completely calm, I know this is wholesome. But if my heart got excited, there's some danger. Yeah, that's not a good action, yeah? Or that's not good, a good word. Mm-hmm. Okay? Anything else? Sani, anything else?
Yeah, there are two more questions on the chat.
Okay.
Just read it. Are heaven and hell actual places, and then how do they look like?
Go! Go and visit them. Yeah? I mean, if you have samadhi, if you have upachara samadhi, you can go to heaven or you can go to hell and visit them. I mean, it's the same thing, you know. I mean, you're in Madrid, you know, on the train station and cannot read the signs. I mean, you don't know how to get to, you know, Paris or to Berlin or whatever, or Rome, yeah? But if you can read the signs, you can go anywhere you want, yeah? Okay, next.
Okay. Yeah, last question. The daily reflection feels so coarse to me, as if I'm thinking hard with my brain to recall all things. Also, my day gets dreary when I make my aim to be mindful of things, so I can remember them in the later part of the evening to reflect.
Yeah, that is okay, you know. I mean, the only thing, yes, in the beginning it takes very long, yeah? Because we need to train it. Everything that we need to train, just like learning to walk or learning to talk, takes some time. You know? And the daily reflection takes time. But, you know, I mean, what people tend to do is to judge, you know, their actions. Yeah? We should not judge. Yeah? We just see it, you know, we feel it, you know, we know it. There was a thought, there was this memory, there was this person, there was this interaction. But we do not judge if it's wholesome or not wholesome. We just let the chitta know what happened, yeah? And then the chitta decides, you know, what is wholesome and unwholesome. And it lets us know. Okay?
Yeah, yes, Longpo. I think there are no more questions.
Yeah. So when are you coming, Sunny? He's in Sakona. Come, it's 2-hour drive to here.
But when it's not so hot.
Yeah. It's not hot, it's humid. Just like humid. In Singapore, you know. I mean, you're outside, you know, and the sweat drips off you. Yeah. I don't think it's very hot, though. No. No, it's just humid, yeah. Now the rainy season, you know. I mean, slowly we get into the rainy season, yeah. This year it started very early, so we really didn't even have a very hot April, yeah? I mean, the April was very short, yeah? A little bit hot, you know, but very short, yeah? And the rainy season started very early. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Come in.
I think Annie wants to say something.
What?
Annie wants to say something? Annie?
Yeah, Lupa.
Yeah,
Lupa, in my meditation practice, when my mind was calm and free from thoughts, there were many occasion bright lights arising and disappearing.
Yeah.
You know, I feel so bored with the nimitta. So I was stuck here. And what is it? This nimitta is kilesa?
Yeah.
Or how should I overcome it? Can Longpo?
Yeah, don't be interested to go back to the Buddha or go back to the breath, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
In our practice, if we pay interest, yeah, to anything that is outside of the Buddha or outside of the breath, this becomes very strong and becomes distracting. That's what the kilesas use, yeah?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
to pull us out, yeah? They don't like to go into samadhi. Because if we go into the samadhi, you know, the kilesas have to wait outside. Yeah?
Okay.
Yeah? When we come out of samadhi, you know, then they, you know, they bring us, you know, back, you know. Oh, this is nice, this is nice. I need to do this, yeah? But in samadhi, you're just, so happy, so contented, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay?
Thank you, Longpo.
So, then we close the session, yeah? I mean, if there are no more questions, yeah? Yeah, one more question, yeah? Yeah?
No,
the Buddha or the breath disappears means our interest in the Buddha or breath has disappeared. So you have to put more interest in the Buddha or into the breath, yeah? You don't what?
I don't hear it with Buddha.
You don't have to see it.
Not here. Here.
You don't have to hear it, you have to think it.
Again.
Yeah.
Buddha,
yeah. But that means, you know, your interest in the Buddha has disappeared, so you bring it back, just one Buddha. Buddha. Yeah? So your interest is coming back, and then you do, you know, then you do it normally. Yeah? What is happening to the Buddha is very similar to the breath. When the Buddha becomes really automatic and we are observing it all the time, yeah, it falls into the heart, yeah, and then the Buddha is repeated actually from the heart, yeah, and then, I mean, that was my experience, you know, I just sit like in a huge cathedral, you know, and hear the Buddha, you know, just like, you know, wow, this is amazing, you know, yeah. You lost the interest in the Buddha. Or it's the same with the breath, yeah? When the breath becomes so subtle, you know, that we cannot feel it, it falls into the heart, and the knowingness falls into the heart, and actually, you know, the knowingness of the breath is much more there than before we could feel it. Yeah, you can feel Buddha whatever you want, but you have to stay with the Buddha. Just make the Buddha interesting, yeah?
Yes, I'm just asking about this stage, and it's in the heart, and how you feel here.
What? How?
How you feel the Buddha in the heart.
That doesn't matter how you feel it, you don't have to feel it, you have to think it, yeah?
You still think.
Yeah, I mean, you install the Buddha until you can listen to the Buddha, yeah? I mean, it will be there, you know, when you install it enough, you know, it will be there, then you listen to the Buddha until the Buddha falls into the heart, and then you listen to the citta, not with your, you know, with your mind, yeah? The Buddha, all these things, you know, I mean, if the Buddha disappears, the breath disappears, means our interest in the object of meditation has disappeared. I mean, we blank out, you know, we just like to stay, you know, with some sort of emptiness, you know. That is wrong path, yeah? I said, when we are with the Buddha, we are on the right path. When we are with the breath, we are on the right path. When we are with something else, we are on the wrong path, yeah? So we have to bring it back. When the breath is the same thing, the knowingness of the breath, you know, is becoming much, much stronger and much clearer, and we see every moment, every single moment of the breath, you know, the in-breath, you know, and the out-breath, and the switch between the in-breath and out-breath. With the Buddha, the same thing. Until, yeah, the breath really stops, you know, and then we have to jump into the knowingness. But before that, we cannot jump, yeah. And the Buddha becomes so strong that, you know, I mean, in both cases, the mind really focusing onto one point. You see it, you feel it, you know, I mean all the body is gone. I mean first, you know, the outside disappears, you know, then the body disappears until there's only this citta, you know, where there's still a little bit of bodily feeling. Huh? I mean in the beginning it doesn't really matter. Yeah? But in the end it has to be inside. Yeah. Okay? So, let's close the session, yeah, Sani?
Yes, Uncle.
Yeah, and everybody yes. Who listened to, yeah, keep up, you know, keep up your practice, yeah, every day, and daily reflection, it shows you a lot what you're doing in your life, what is wholesome, what is not wholesome. You don't have to think about it. You just show the chitta, and the chitta knows if it's wholesome or not wholesome. Okay, bye-bye.
Yeah, thank you, Lopo. Just pay respects, Lopo. We're bowing three times. Well.